Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. Sorry for the little bit of a delayed start time here tonight, but we are now here. I am Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up for tonight for Vengeance Day here, February 15th, 2022. With me is not one of the usual idiots, but one of the sometime idiots, and we've got we get Dr. Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing well, thank you. I have the report for Vengeance Day up tonight. My report was the only one today. Unfortunately, Kelly had some issues to attend to, but hopefully he'll be fine and everything will be dandy next week. So you can catch my report there. As detailed as I can get it, though, I think I made a couple mistakes because I wasn't sure about some of the people. They showed them these in-between vignettes and everything. So, when we get there, we'll talk about it. But let me just say, the matches were good, but the show overall was hit and miss.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. But we will certainly get there when we get there. We had a main event. We're going to start with that tonight, and then we're going to go to the phone lines, and I will get to emails this week, guys. I completely forgot to touch the mailbag last week. We have two emails from last week, as well as two emails from this week so far. I'm going to pay attention to the inbox. Sometimes a couple come in and sneak under the radar after we start the show. So we'll see what happens there. But let's first talk about the main event. We had Bron Breakker versus Santos Escobar. Hey, do you have the time on that? Because I don't at the moment.
Yeah, let me pull up my report. I was just doing that. I believe it was right around 12, but let me make sure. Let me see.
All right.
I think the longest match of the night was earlier in the night, and this match was with the overrun 12:06. Yeah, 12:06.
12:06. Awesome. So 12:06. We saw Bron Breakker get the win tonight. After a lot of distraction went on here, we had Legado del Fantasma, Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza causing a distraction. Then we also had Electra Lopez causing a distraction. We had Dolph Ziggler run in, do a super kick to Bron Breakker, causing another distraction, all eventually still leading up to Bron Breakker overcoming the odds and taking the win here tonight. I thought this was an interesting way to book the match. This is just a little bit too chaotic and main rostery for me, but at the same time, I understand why they did it. It did get all four men involved in the title picture involved here in this particular segment. And it's nice to see Dolph Ziggler as well as Tommaso Ciampa at least show up here for the show tonight, not booked, but at least show up, show their face because they are in contention for this title as well as potentially I want to make sure I'm saying it right because, goddamn, I don't want him angry at me. I still want to call him Walter, but, that's that. That being said, what did you think of the match, Bruce?
So I actually I wrote out Walter and had to delete it and retype Gunter because I forgot about the name change. So
my notes, I take some, just personal notes for the podcast, and it all says Walter because I keep forgetting myself.
Well, regarding the main event, I said the distractions were only good insofar as they're still building on the overall feud between these four men that was started last week. However, there were two things I questioned about this match. One is all the distractions. It's just too many. You know when LDS is out there, something's going to happen, and they all got involved multiple times. It's just, it's too predictable, and sometimes predictability is fine, like the Creed brothers winning tonight, but sometimes predictability is bad, like all these damn distractions. And the second thing I questioned because of that was the booking of Bron Breakker in his last few matches, which have been, if I remember correctly, Roderick Strong, Gunther, I believe, and then, I don't know, maybe not Gunther. I just think his last couple of matches, if I remember correctly, he's taken a lot of offense and he's gained the victory in the end, but it just seems like he's taking a lot more offense than what you would perceive on how they've kind of characterized his character as his, unstoppable, hungry force. And it just seems to me a bit what's the word? Off kilter, I guess, from how he's being booked. So those are the two things I questioned. The match was fine, although I'm intrigued at why it went a lot slower than I thought it would, and why Escobar was the one who was kind of the one slowing it down. Although, you know, Breaker is someone who's usually explosive and quick spurt, so maybe slowing it down is a good strategy. It just seemed odd that this match was one that was so slowed down compared to the other ones. But I think the most interesting aspect of this is that it wasn't really a match. It was more of a match to set up an angle to set up a match, if that makes any sense, because of what happened at the end between all four of these men. I mean, we knew Breaker was going to win, so the match was there, but it really was there to all set up the last minute or two of the match with Ziggler, Ciampa, and then the finish. I'm not sure if that's how you should be booking your main event of a special episode, but that's what happened tonight. And so I'm going to be curious to hear what the emailers and the callers say about what they thought of how the main event transpired and what they thought of the ending specifically.
I kind of feel like they almost booked themselves into a corner because, excuse me one second, I'm going to cough. All right, now that I'm back, I feel like they booked themselves into a corner because last week they pulled that angle where they had Ciampa, Ziggler, Breaker, and
Escobar,
thank you, wow, all in the ring at the same time. And just like I glossed over Escobar, when Ciampa and Ziggler were talking about the title, they were talking about facing Bron Breakker, glossing over Escobar. And I felt like that had a lot of foreshadowing into the match here tonight. Like Escobar had absolutely zero chance of winning for that reason and much more. You know, Bron Breakker is the new guy. He is the face of NXT, according to the NXT brass. So at least on the male side of things. So it really didn't feel like Escobar had a chance at hell to win, but because of that, I think they kind of needed to do something here tonight. Bron Breakker just winning clean, I think, just would have felt too predictable. Where this is not my favorite finish, and I'm not necessarily advocating for it, but by the same time, I can kind of see why they did it because it does set it up for a bigger match with a bigger star in Dolph Ziggler, as weird as that is to say. But by the same token, I think they also could have done it because they're on Sci-Fi and they're probably expecting a much smaller audience for this particular show, this particular, not pay-per-view, but premium live event, if you will. I don't think they're calling these premium live events, but you know what I mean. So that's kind of where I think with that. Before I actually go to the phone lines, because of what I just brought up, I'm going to throw to an email from JB from last week. It's a quick one. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Do you guys find it weird that NXT is having Vengeance Day on one of the nights that NXT will be on Sci-Fi due to the Olympics? Love the show and go VIP. And I kind of, in a way, yes. They had to have been anticipating a smaller crowd. Yeah, it kind of is a little bit weird, but by the same token, if this is the flow of their story and things were going to happen tonight and things were, you know, Dolph Ziggler probably had a flight booked. Well, I don't know. That could have also been last minute, but you know what I mean? That there were also things in place that had Vengeance Day falling on this particular night. I'm sure months ago when the decision was made for them to be on Sci-Fi or what have you, they may have just had to roll with it. At least that's my two cents. Bruce, do you have any thoughts on that?
I wouldn't be surprised if they always had this Tuesday locked in as some kind of special event because of this tie to Valentine's Day yesterday.
Yeah.
And that they just had an oversight and didn't realize that the Winter Olympics were also going to be on.
You know, that wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, it really wouldn't surprise me if that happened, and they just had to run with it. And, you know, how do I put this? So having it on the network you're not usually on is definitely not a good sign. But I also feel like they've kind of made Valentine's Day an expected annual event now in NXT with Vengeance Day. And so for them to forego that just because of being on Sci-Fi, I don't think would send a strong message necessarily, both to the networks and to the fans in terms of how they view sort of, not necessarily demotion, but the temporary switch because of the Olympics. So I think for multiple reasons, they kind of locked themselves into having this special event, for lack of a better term, on this day, not just because of Valentine's Day itself, but I think they've done this multiple years now on or around Valentine's Day for events. So with that in mind, I think they were always locked in and then probably just forgot the Olympics were happening.
Yeah, like I said, absolutely would not surprise me at all. All right, so let's go to the phone lines and open up the conversation to you guys. Now, I'm bad at the remembering phone numbers game, so rather than taking a guess at who it might be and then being wrong, I'm just going to go ahead and go by the area code. So area code 410, going to start with you. Go ahead, state your name, where are you calling from? Embarrass me because I probably should know who this is, and then go ahead and tell us what you want to call talk about.
Reverend Dr. Keith Bennett from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm sure you knew it was me, but I don't blame you. I wouldn't have guessed either. How you doing?
I was like 98% sure, but, you know, did not want to get it wrong. I'm doing very good tonight. How about yourself, Keith?
Fine. And from one doctor to another, it's always good to talk to you, Doc Bruce. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You too. And to be fair to you, Nate, I think there are multiple Baltimore area codes that call into these lines. So don't be too hard on yourself.
Well, you know, I mean, okay, I won't. So, all right. So, Keith, what did you think of the show and what talking points do you have?
Well, I want to start with what the good doctor brought up a few moments ago about the main event. I truly felt, along with you, Doc Bruce, that it was overbooked. We were expecting Legato to get involved, but you also, in addition to Mendoza and Wild, you had the lovely Electra, you had Dolph Inafia, you had Tommaso Ciampa. It was just too much. And, I mean, plus the match itself was underwhelming, by my standards at least. You know, it was a much slower pace. And it just seemed to drag. I mean, I know it only went 12:06 or 12:07, but at the same token, it seemed like it lasted like 20 minutes. It just kept going on and on and on. So those are my thoughts on the main event.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think it certainly was overbooked, and it did feel like it was a bit of a slog. I mean, I personally still enjoyed the match, but I feel like they could have certainly cut down on some of the offense that Escobar was getting towards the. It was after all the interference. It was right towards the end. I think it was towards the end. He was getting. I think that was part of the match. But regardless, they could have cut down a little bit of the offense that Escobar was getting over Bron Breakker, because like. I feel like he got a little bit too much in, and it kind of made Bron Breakker feel a little less than. I also feel like for his first title defense, just all of this chaos that was happening made his win also feel a little bit cheapened it a bit made it feel a little bit less important than it probably should have. Granted, sure. You know, it is building up to a bigger angle. Where hopefully he winds up retaining against, you know, three relatively big names within the industry and does start to build more of a name for himself. But at least for this win, yeah, I agree. It didn't feel, it felt a little bit slow and clunky. Bruce.
So remember when Zion Quinn was feuding with Santos Escobar? I think my first night covering as the official off-perspective reporter, they had a match, and I noted that 90% of the match was taking place in the corners where Zion Quinn or Escobar is getting offense only in the corners. The beginning of this match, I should have known it was going to be something similar because Bron Breakker was only going for a side headlock for the first 3 or 4 minutes of this match. And, well, it might not have been 3 or 4 minutes, but as Keith was saying, it felt like 3 or 4 minutes at least. And part of me wonders if that's Escobar's sort of tactics with working with more green wrestlers in the ring, because we know he can put on great matches, but I wonder if he's just not as confident in them, so he has them do more things that are not more rote, so that they can kind of get into a rhythm. Excuse me. And I think that is part of the reason why this match just lacks some oomph. You know, it was slower paced. Carmelo Hayes is showing why he's the A champion on the show, regardless of what you might think of his act, but he's the one whose matches I feel like I want to watch. Whereas this one, you know, I wanted to watch it in so far as to see how much Breaker has grown, but I knew the outcome coming in. The shenanigans didn't help offset any of the sort of apathy I had heading into the match. So that's not a good sign for your main event champion. Now, it could just be that Escobar is not a good opponent for Breaker. There's always been those times when people aren't good with each other. But now my thing is, who do you go with Breaker next? Do you go for Ziggler? Do you go for Ciampa? Or do you go for Gunther, right? I think you probably want to go for Ziggler, because Ziggler can bump like hell for everybody. He can make anybody look good. He might yell a lot, but that actually works in NXT, in that contained center, in that environment. And he has someone like Breaker who has that energy to feed off of, that kind of intense sort of yelling energy that Ziggler has, that they can work well off of each other. And I think that is the best way to go moving forward with Breaker, because, one, Ziggler can teach him a lot. But two, with how we're coming off of this match, not necessarily impressed, a way to get us back to being impressed is having Ziggler make him look like, you know, like Bobby Lashley out there in 05 just drilling fools, or Monty Brown hitting the pounce on everybody because of how Ziggler bumps. You know, when Goldberg came, or when Edge came back, and that spear bump he took in the Royal Rumble that the cameras kind of missed, but when he saw it, you're like, oh my goodness, right? Those are the things that Ziggler can do that will really help Breaker. So I hope that's where they go. I just have questioned some of the booking in NXT recently in terms of how quickly they've gone to some feuds. So I hope that they don't go automatically back to Ciampa or into Gunther, and they stick with Ziggler.
I have a feeling, go ahead, Keith.
I was going to say, I truly agree with you, because Ziggler will teach Breaker a lot in the ring. And Ziggler, as we all know from years of experience, he's a bumping machine. He, like AJ Styles, they can wrestle a broom and make the broom look good. So I think that the booking committee in NXT should schedule a match between Dolph and Breaker next. And I'm almost certain that's why they sent Ziggler to NXT to begin with.
I'm kind of wondering, because I agree, and I hope that a one-on-one match between Braun and whoever winds up on the other side of the ring, I hope it's a one-on-one match and it's not a multi-person match for the title. But I do hope it is Dolph Ziggler across the ring from him. What I'm wondering is something like over the next few weeks, we wind up seeing Gunther inserting himself into this feud between Escobar, Ziggler and Ciampa somehow, or a fatal four-way match that winds up getting booked between those four to determine who's going to be the number one contender for Braun Breaker. That's kind of the way I'm thinking this might wind up playing out, simply because now we have four challengers. The other thing is, I'm also wondering if the Ciampa-Ziggler feud winds up spilling over to Raw and then becomes a storyline on Raw, and they kind of wind up forgetting about the NXT title.
It's already a storyline on Raw, Nate.
No, I know that, and that's what I mean. It winds up continuing to be a storyline on Raw, not on NXT, which winds up leading to Tommaso Ciampa's, like, full debut on Raw. I hope that's not the way it's going, but it's certainly something that came to mind. Obviously we'll see where it goes, but at the end of the day, I do want to see Braun Breaker in the ring against Dolph Ziggler for all of the reasons you guys mentioned. Dolph is an amazing hand in the ring, and he's got a way of making anybody look great. So I think Breaker has a lot to learn from him. Keith, is there anything else you want to talk about tonight?
I also wanted to bring up the opening bout. I was reading Doc Bruce Pink on PW Torch, and I agree with everything he wrote that, you know, it was kind of amazing that they had Tony D'Angelo kick out of the bitter end at first. And then he came back and ended up succumbing to it a second time. Now, I was surprised when I was watching the match at how it was laid out. But then later in the show, gentlemen, I realized why they had Dunn go over, because he's next in line to challenge my man, Carmelo Hayes, for his North American title. So I can see where they're going there. I think that's going to be a great feud, but I don't know where they go next with Tony D'Angelo. But at the same token, now I see why they made that decision to have Dunn go over. And it was a good match. I was shocked that they began the show with that match. I thought they was going to kick off the show with the Dusty Classic Cup Finals. But I thought this was a very good match in the end. You know, I was just surprised at the outcome. But then later on, like I said, they revealed why they had Dunn go over. So I wanted to comment on that as well.
So I actually had that same kind of that same exact like eureka moment too when Pete Dunne came out and talked with Carmelo Hayes backstage. I'm like, okay, that's why Dunne went over, because before I was really having some like I was really struggling to figure out what the reason was for Tony D'Angelo losing. Like, I'm not complaining, because I'm a huge Pete Dunne fan, so I'm personally in favor of watching him win anything. But from the booking perspective, it's, you know, Tony D'Angelo, he's the 2.0 class. He's the new guy, right? He's the new face in town. He's the one that they're trying to book to be a star. And I mean, so far, I feel like they've done a good job with Tony D'Angelo until the last couple of weeks. He's kind of felt like a little bit of a knucklehead. You know, and then now he's losing in this match. He put on a great show, put on a great performance tonight. Absolutely. And you know, that you know, give credit where credit's due. But by the same token, after losing that, where does he go? I'm kind of hoping that, you know, he acknowledges the loss and kind of finds some fire from that loss, and we see a bit more of a an intense Tony D'Angelo. I think he said he's Sicilian, even though I have a last name Lindbergh, I'm part Sicilian, part Italian, most of my blood anyway. And I know Sicilian, they can get heated pretty quick.
They can get fiery. Yeah, I used to work with one.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so I'm kind of wondering if we'll wind up seeing the Sicilian come out of him, which I think would be a great angle, and it'd be a great way to kind of build him as a much stronger heel. But yeah, I think that's exactly why Pete Dunne went over, because he's going to, they need to kind of build him up to be a little bit stronger to go up against Carmelo Hayes for North American title, which right now it does kind of feel like it's, I wouldn't say it's more prestigious than the NXT title, but like I really enjoy what Carmelo Hayes is doing, and he's surprised me. And he's made that title feel important again. So yes. I agree with you there. Bruce?
I'm going to hit the Dunn point last. So on your Hayes North American Championship point, it reminds me of when, like, the ROH TV title was more prestigious or felt more prestigious than the ROH World Championship, or when Bret Hart as Intercontinental Champion felt more prestigious than whoever was WWE Champion at the time. There are those times when the secondary title, or a secondary title in this case, can carry more weight than the main championship because of, you know, the character presentation, whoever's holding the championship, et cetera. And right. The thing about Carmelo Hayes is, you know, the good Reverend and I have been high on Carmelo Hayes since before he was even in NXT. And as soon as he was in the breakout tournament, we're like, all right, here we go. We know it's going to happen. And he's the person who, out of the 2.0 crew, has most not just found his character, but has fully embodied the character into a point where it doesn't feel gimmicky, it doesn't feel stereotyped, it feels more genuine, genuinely him. Trick can kind of come off sometimes as a bit overzealous, but I'm pretty sure Keith and I both have known people in our lives who are like that, who are those hype men for our people. And so to a certain extent, we can relate to that. And so I do believe that he is the top champion, not just because he says he is, but he carries himself and his matches and his feuds and his angles and his promos all as the top champion. Now, when I look at Tony D'Angelo, my issue is he shows it from time to time, and he showed it at the beginning of the match tonight. I think he was a former All-American wrestler, right? So he has those chops. He can be basically a Creed brother, essentially. You know what I'm saying? I would like for him to show more of that. And, you know, the stereotype is very, very, very apparent with him. And if he can cut back a little on that and start moving in some more of that amateur background to reinforce sort of his ruthlessness, to say, right? Kind of like the Creed brothers do in their matches. And I don't know why I keep comparing them, but I am. So with D'Angelo, I was one of the few who was high on him coming out of War Games. And I thought he was ready for a good push towards challenging someone like Carmelo Hayes for North American Championship in about 3 to 6 months. Now, I don't know where they're going. To Dunn, my thing here, and it's going to be the same thing that I had the issue in regards to Cameron Grimes challenging Carmelo Hayes so quickly, is I don't know, just like Cameron Grimes, if Pete Dunn can take another loss in a big feud in a big match. Because right now I'm wondering, what the hell do you do with Cameron Grimes? If Pete Dunne loses, the only thing I can see for these two, Grimes and Dunne, is that they're moving to Raw or SmackDown. Because if they're not, then they need to win. They have to win these feuds, and they just don't.
True.
And because of that, I am very – I understand having Dunne go over here, but you also didn't need the winner of that match to be – Hayes' next challenger. You could have taken a week or two just to have Hayes come out and gloat about being the top champion and then work someone who's won over the last 2 weeks or so to challenge him. I think sometimes in 2.0 what's going on here is they're skipping one, two, sometimes five steps to get to where they want to be. And I think here they needed to hold off a bit longer, because if I don't think Hayes should lose the title. I think he should have a long, long reign as unified champion. If Dunn loses, I don't know what you do besides move him to Raw or SmackDown.
Wow. I get it. I understand. I understand truly. So we'll have to see where they go with this feud between Melo and Dunn. I think it's going to last a while. I could see them going for a month or two. And I think they'll truly bring out the best in each other. One more comment.
Well, sorry to interrupt
you
real quick.
Okay.
The thing is, a long feud used to be 3 to 6 months. Now you're saying 1 to 2 months. It's just an indication of that's not very long, actually. That's not even WrestleMania, 1 to 2 months. Well, 2 months maybe, but 1 month. So that's what I'm saying about what do you do if Dunn loses, because that's a ripe time for him to move after Mania, but if it comes after Mania, then again, I'm just not sure. So sorry to interrupt.
No, but you do have a point. Now, keep in mind, NXT does do a special show, which is by all indications, unless they change the timing, it's scheduled for an afternoon matinee show on night one of WrestleMania, that Saturday. So they could have the feud kick off in the next couple of weeks and still cap off at WrestleMania, because WrestleMania is April 3rd or 4th, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure.
And that's still almost 2 months between Dunn and Melo. That's what I was saying. Of course, the way wrestling is booked, and with so many TV shows now, you don't have your 3 to 6 month feuds. Those were back in the days before you had 10 hours of network television every week. So I could see Dunn and Melo stretching out to WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, for sure. All right, is there anything else? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead.
One last comment, Nate and Doc.
Sure.
And I'm enjoying talking with you tonight. I have really enjoyed the Creed brothers performance tonight. I really think that they set the world on fire. They let people know that they are serious. They showed off their technical skills from college. They also showed a fire in them. And I'm very happy. I can't say it enough. I was sharing with my relatives tonight. I'm very happy for Malcolm Bivens. I met him here, Ring of Honor, about 7 years ago. The man is truly top-notch. He's 100. What you see is what you get. He's a great guy. He's fought for everything he's gotten in this wrestling business. Stokely is. I was just happy to see him finally capture something, being the manager of Diamond Mine. He deserves it. You know, Stokely is well-traveled. And he's on his way to more stardom. I can see him being the next big African-American wrestling manager in this business on a main stage. I'm not talking about NXT, not to take anything away from NXT, but I'm talking about a main roster African-American wrestling manager. I think he's on his way to stardom, whether it's in WWE, AEW, or anywhere. He's gonna take whoever he manages to the next level. He just has it. Mm-hmm. And I think the Creed brothers really look good tonight, and I expect nothing but greater things from them. Chomp on that, guys, and thanks for taking my call. Look forward to talking to you soon. God bless you all. Have a good week.
Thank you, Keith.
All right, Keith, thank you as always. Bruce, go ahead and take that and roll with it, and I'll respond afterwards. I'm trying to fix something with the hits and misses.
Sure. So Malcolm Bivens looked like a proud papa after that match. He just looked so happy for them, and I was happy for him to be so happy. It just looked really genuine. To Keith's point, the Creed brothers are fantastic. I see a lot of the world's greatest tag team in them, but they're a bit more – they got a bit more stank on their stuff, right? And he's talking about how they're aggressive. Brutus, to me, sometimes I joke to myself that he's so intense that he might have an aneurysm during a show sometime because of how much it's like he's going Super Saiyan at some point. The match tonight was really good. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I don't think there were any spots that I noticed that were mistimed, mishapped. It was a really smooth, fun match. A good clash of styles. The Creed brothers using more of their amateur and background and being more physical, as MSK is doing more athletic and acrobatic things to try and keep the pace. And so for me, the Creed brothers are who we all thought, I think most of us thought, most of us thought we're going to win this match when they announced it, or win this tournament when the Dusty Classic was announced, and they rightly won the match. I do think that the titles should switch to them. Imperium, I have liked Imperium in the past. It just seems like whenever they become NXT Tag Team Champions, something is taken out of them in terms of their presentation and their booking, where they just kind of fall flat. And so with how hot the Creed brothers are, with how good Brutus and Julius look in there, both as a team, and then when they have their own moments of singles time in the ring, they should really take titles, and then this could be the start of Diamond Mine starting their journey towards claiming more titles, right? You can start building up Ivy Nile towards the women's title. Roderick Strong can go back towards the North American Championship and stake a claim saying, I never got a rematch. We unified the titles. Let's go at it again. And maybe he's the one who does end up dethroning Carmelo Hayes, which would free up Hayes in the future for the NXT Championship. I just think there was a lot coming out of this. I do think MSK, real quickly, a lot of the luster, I think, has definitely worn off for me on them, and a lot of it has to do with their promos and their character presentation. I think the funniest line was when Bivens tonight said, the only things that, we get high off hard work and yada yada, and Bivens said, the only things that you get high on is illegal in 13 states. And I thought that was the line of the night. And so that
absolutely,
to me is, and for MSK, it's okay to have that as part of your character, but I also think for them, it would behoove them to have a bit more seriousness added on to the layers of how they present themselves. But overall, I thought that this Dusty Classic was one of the more memorable ones, partly because of Inoue and Blade, or as we said last week in a group chat with a JRPG weapon, Inoue Blade, that there was just more memorable moments this year. And this final was one of the better final matches I can remember. I do think the first one with Joe and Balor, that was a good one. And one of the ones with AOP, I believe, was pretty good. But this was a really good match, too. So if you didn't get a chance to watch the match, you won't have wasted your time watching the match.
Yeah, this is actually the first time I really got invested in an MSK match. And that's saying something, because for some reason, and I've talked about it here, I've talked about it in the hits and misses, I have not been able to get invested in MSK. And it's weird because even though they've got some awful comedy, it's kind of my style of humor. And like, I feel like they're almost like designed to appeal to me, and they just don't. but tonight, you know, and I'm not necessarily talking about like their promo earlier in the night.
Oh, that was off.
Which, yeah, was pretty terrible. But their work here with the Creed brothers was actually really good. They made the Creed brothers look like $1 million, helped the Creed brothers make themselves look like $1 million. Mm-hmm. What I really actually liked, and I talked about this on Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks the other day on Sunday, I really wanted to see more of the Creed brothers on the mic, because we really haven't seen much of that. And I know, obviously, they've got one hell of a mouthpiece in Malcolm Bivens, but I want to just know that they can talk before I can really get behind them, right? I don't want to be like, okay, these are my guys, right? I love these guys. And then, you know, months down the line, I hear them on the mic and I go, whoa, and it's just completely immersion breaking. So I'm glad we got a little bit of them talking tonight, and they actually pulled it off. It was certainly not the greatest promo work in the world, but it certainly was far from the worst promo work on this show. So credit to them where credit's due. I'm going to just keep rolling along here, because we do have a couple more callers and we've got three more emails to get to. And quite frankly, I think Bruce and I also need to have a bit of a short show if we can possibly make that happen. So with that, let's get over to area code 814. 814, state your name, where you're calling from, and what talking points do you have?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, what'd you think of the show?
It was a pretty good show. My first question is on the Creed brothers. I'm prepared to mention the Alpha Academy, well, not by name, but they said Raw Tag Team Champions during that match, possibly a match down the line. Do you think that will happen anytime soon with the Creed brothers?
Don't tease me, Ryan. Don't tease
me. Yeah,
please.
Right? Seriously.
Ooh, don't tease me. Oh, my gosh. Don't tease me.
I hope it does. I seriously hope it does. I would not – like, I don't think the Creed brothers are ready to go to the main roster just yet.
Oh.
By a long shot. But if they were to come – and by they, I mean Alpha Academy, if they were to come down to NXT a la Dolph Ziggler and AJ Styles to challenge them, oh, my God, yes, please, please book it, make it happen. I don't know if it would, but I certainly hope it does. If Alpha Academy is still together when, you know, presumably Creed Brothers hit the main roster – you know, if Alpha Academy is still there, you know, with the changing WWE roster, you never know nowadays. I can certainly see that being a money tag team match down the line. As long as Vince sees it as a money tag team match down the line, Bruce.
So I do think it's more likely to happen if they're not the tag team champions, Alpha Academy. The other thing too is that works in the favor, I should say, is both Otis and Chad Gable have ties, connections. They literally started their WWE careers in NXT. So they could go back. It's just like kind of Ziggler didn't start there. But if they really are doing this thing where they're sending, quote, main roster talent to NXT to work certain feuds, like they used, you know, Kelly and Nate on 8YB right now, they're talking about a time when you would see the Tyson Kids, the Titus O'Neils, on the show, you know, Natalya facing Charlotte Flair for the first not the first, but to declare a champion, right, at one of the first takeovers. Like, you had people coming in from Raw and SmackDown to NXT to work with these talents, not just to teach them, but to help put them over. So if that does happen, I don't think, how do I put this? Ziggler is someone I think is fine losing. I'm not sure if Alpha Academy is an act yet you want to come down and lose to the Creed Brothers in NXT. They could have a standout match like American Alpha had with FTR or with AOP back in the day. But I think that if they do come down and have a match, that the Creed Brothers need to put over Alpha Academy, but in a strong match, it's kind of 50-50, just to show how good and strong they are as potential, like, this is a team to look out for in the future.
Yeah, I don't think I disagree with that. I don't think I do, because there's certainly part of me that says, you know, if you come down to NXT to, like, try to help build up somebody, like, put them over, but by the same token, you're putting over developmental talent, which is only going to kind of sort of define you down on the main roster. So there's definitely a balance that needs to be struck there. But I think I would be in favor of that. I think I would be in favor of them putting Alpha Academy over in that particular instance. Ryan, what else do you have for us tonight?
I have a question on Toxic Attraction. How did they come up with, like, who's going to be in a stable? Is it more like, does Mandy Rose, like, possibly say that she wants to work with these people, or does Bruce come to them and say you're going to work with these people, or, you know, like a Shawn Michaels come to them? Because I know Shawn Michaels, they just, like, Triple H said he wanted to work with him, so I didn't know if it's still that way or what the rules are now for that.
I'll be honest, I really don't know. I think if it's anything like, you know, the main roster, at least from what I've heard, you know, the main roster is kind of a little bit of both. You know, you can come up with ideas and pitch them to the creative team, or, you know, or if you've got the relationship with Vince, to Vince himself, you know, and they can, if they like it, they'll roll with it and kind of let you have some creative ability and creative ideas and things like that with it. But a lot of times it's just, you know, creative going, hey, okay, we're going to put you guys together. In the case of Toxic Attraction, I personally don't know. I don't know, Bruce, if you know at all. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was kind of like a, you know, Mandy, you're going down to NXT. We've got this cool thing for you to do. You know, you don't have a whole lot to do on the main roster. You know, and heck, I mean, they might, and this is just pure speculation. I don't have any reason to, you know, any source for any of this, but, you know, they could have perhaps just not been satisfied with what she was doing on the main roster, wanted to bring her back down to developmental, but still felt that she was probably more polished than the majority of the women's division at the moment, at least the women they wanted to push. And they felt that you know, she would probably benefit from being the leader of a stable and NXT Women's Champion, not just because she can teach the other two that are learning, but also learn more herself by teaching. Again, pure speculation, but that's at least kind of what comes to my mind anyway. Bruce?
I just haven't seen enough improvement in Mandy Rose over the last several years to make me think that she's a swell teacher. But here's what I think may have happened, and this is again speculation. I wouldn't have been surprised if in the conversations with her to bring her down to NXT, the conditions she asked for, besides being NXT Women's Champion, was to work with these two and have a stable, and that's how they worked into her becoming a Women's Champion. I just don't think she has enough pull by herself to say, I want to work with them, but if it was part of a negotiation to get her down, then I think that that's what could have happened. However, I also think that the most likely outcome is Bruce and Vince just said, you're going to work with these two, we're going to make it work, you're going to be Toxic Attraction, it's going to be about your beauty, etc., yada, 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 and they went from there.
Yeah, I mean, the more I thought about it too while you were talking, it's like they did at the time right before NXT 2.0. It was either right before or right after the launch of NXT 2.0. I don't remember exactly the time frame, but it was, you know, it came out that, like, they were trying to brand NXT 2.0 as an edgier product. You know, we were going to see a little bit more skin and things like that.
The promos were based around Mandy Rose's breasts. Let's be honest.
Right. You know, and then we had that, you know, that schoolboy stuff with the Nofei blade, the JRPG sword, as we've kind of dubbed them. We had that stupid, you know, thing with them and Mandy Rose falling in their lap and him, you know, not being able to stand up, if you catch my drift, because, you know, that's what they said on the show anyway. So then we've got penis jokes all of a sudden, which is now a complete derailment of what we were really talking about. But I think it's really more likely that they just went, okay, Mandy Rose, you're what we think is attractive. We're going to dye your hair. We're going to put you with these two women that are up and coming and are also attractive. And we're going to make you bear a little bit of skin and make you the face of NXT 2.0. That's probably most likely what happened, if I had to guess. Ryan?
Okay. My final question is, I don't know if you caught it, they talked about some sort of tournament that's NXT during WrestleMania. Do you know anything about this tournament? Because I tried looking it up. I couldn't find any info. I know they said during, like, after the Creeds won their tournament, they were sort of promoting it.
Actually completely missed that. Did you pick up on that, Bruce?
No, I missed it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's kind of like the next version of Worlds Collide or something.
That wouldn't surprise me either. You know, where, you know, I mean, I guess it's kind of a good place to bring it up too, you know, that they've just rebranded 205 Live, you know, as NXT Level Up, which I don't really think is going to be much of a change from what 205 Live has been, where 205 Live hasn't really been focused on wrestlers 205 and under, you know, as of late anyway. So I think this is just going to really kind of be a continuation of what 205 Live has been, which has kind of been an undercard show for NXT 2.0. But yeah, if they did mention something about another tournament, I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like Worlds Collide. That's actually a really good thought, Bruce. I would be, I'm wondering how, well, actually I think COVID restrictions have been lifted in the UK. So they could probably get a lot of the talent from that over here.
I do think that NXT has held these weekend tournaments before some of the bigger pay-per-views like Royal Rumble or WrestleMania. I think that's how they used to establish who would enter the Royal Rumble from NXT in the early days, is they won a Battle Royal in an NXT tournament or something during the weekend. So it will be, if next week we could ask Tom or Kelly if they remember about any sort of these weekend tournaments before Mania and what that might entail. Because I think they have done it in the past for Mania. I know, I'm certain they've done it for the Rumble, which is how they determined, like, Bo Dallas entering that one year. But
I think you're right.
Yeah. When it comes to Mania, I want to say yes, but I'm hedging here. I do think they have done one for Mania, but I can't be 100% certain.
Fair enough. Ryan, is there anything else you have for us tonight, or shall we move on to the next caller?
The only thing I have is, I know they mentioned the Creeds are in contention to be in that event now since they won the tournament. That's the only tidbit I caught from what the announcers were saying.
I couldn't catch a lot of what Joseph was saying tonight, to be honest.
Yeah, he seemed, yeah. His mic definitely seemed like it was a little bit off or something like that.
Thanks for taking the call tonight.
All right. Not a problem, Ryan. Not a problem. Thank you, as always, for calling in. And we're now going to go to a number that I do not recognize whatsoever. I don't believe he's ever called into the show before. I'm even just assuming he's a he. Area code 478. Go ahead. State your name. Where are you calling from?
Darrell from Georgia. How you guys doing?
Not too bad, Darrell. Not too bad. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing quite well. Checking out the scenery with you guys.
Yes, it's been a little while. Definitely been a little while. Good to hear from you. What did you think of Vengeance Day?
Okay. It was okay. It was okay for what I was watching. Let's say that.
Okay. All right. What did you wind up watching?
Okay. First, that tournament that y'all were talking about, the only tournament they brought up was the Women's Dusty Classic. That's the only tournament that they brought up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only tournament that I could think of as well, yeah.
Yeah. And I know y'all in and around it, but y'all didn't go to it. But I want to talk about the main event, or the real main event, best match on the card. Kamala Hayes versus Cameron Grimes, the true main event that should have ended the show. The only two bad things about this this match was the beginning, before the match even started, them continuously with how they do tricks and had him they put that basketball in his hand with every stereotypical thing that they do with him. They had him do, but that was not. And then having this match on a card that was not as up to par, and how they doing Carmelo. I think if Carmelo's matches was, they were giving him, which they probably were, because remember he came in to a big match that he performed well in from the first match he came that they gave him, if everybody remember. But if I swear, he was having these matches back in the old NXT, his star would have risen. And I think they're doing him such an injustice. And the reason why y'all feel his matches are better is because of the quality of matches overall have gone down incredibly. If he was on a card back when, especially when they was on paper and doing the pay-per-view shows and stuff like that, on NXT TakeOver Brooklyn on one of their shows, and you get to see him put on his caliber type of match that you would see, I think it will increase his stardom, because right now he's having the best matches on the card. We can say he's having the best matches on the card. Yes, because he's having the best matches on the card, it makes that title seem stronger, but it's not making his star shine brighter because of the concept of the whole NXT itself. So my question will be with you guys. How do you guys like the match, the breakdown of the match, the real main event of the show, and what do you guys think about that perspective, that they're doing him an injustice? And if he was on, like, one of those old cards, how would his star be shining? And we will be talking about how quick they would want him to come up to NXT. Because as you see from the Rumble, I don't think they want any of these people to be on the main roster. But what you guys think?
Yeah, I don't think they want anybody from NXT really showing up on the main roster, unless they're obviously in an angle with somebody from the main roster that's come down to NXT. Because obviously we saw Grayson Waller and Tommaso Ciampa show up, on Raw. I don't know if this is a full-time call-up for Ciampa or not. I'm kind of hoping not, selfishly, but we'll obviously see there. But with Carmelo Hayes, it's a tough one, because there's a part of me that totally hears what you're saying, because obviously, the quality of match, caliber of match that we're used to seeing on NXT has drastically declined since the switch to NXT 2.0, simply because it's gone to a developmental brand once again. So if I was to kind of take the current iteration of his character and try to place it, like in NXT, say, a year and a half ago, I think he probably would flourish, and having, being able to rub elbows with people like Samoa Joe and Karrion Kross and Gargano and Ciampa, he still has the ability to, tie up with Ciampa if he gets to at some point in NXT. But I think that probably would raise his stock a little bit more, because they were more prominent names. People already, they were established already. Whereas a lot of the guys now, not necessarily. Cameron Grimes, yes, to a point. Cameron Grimes is obviously one of my favorite things on NXT. But I don't think he's necessarily like a main money draw. He hasn't hit the main event scene. I hope he does. I really do, because I feel like he could definitely do it. And I feel like he's got a gimmick that could certainly get him there, at least for like a, you know, a short title run or something like that. But I kind of don't see it happening for him, at least right now. I feel like Cameron Grimes, he's I don't want to say this, like, I hate saying this because, like, I love Cameron Grimes, but I haven't really cared much about Cameron Grimes recently. You know, Tom and I were talking about this last week, where Cameron Grimes, he's been booked he hasn't really been booked super, I'm trying to find the right word, but he's been kind of just like, his booking hasn't been quite as exciting, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, as things like with, you know, the Million Dollar Man. The feud with Duke Hudson was a little strange because, you know, Duke Hudson was, you know, he's the one that wound up losing the match, but Cameron Grimes is the one that got the makeover. You know, it was a little, so like that booking was a little weird, which I felt like defined Cameron Grimes a little bit down too. That all of that being said, this match in particular, I thought was fantastic. The booking to get here was the problem. It consistently week after week, it was just kind of, it was subpar. It kind of just felt like it was an afterthought on the show, for me anyway. So I ended up having to give, like, in the hits and misses, I kind of gave this a 50-50, and it pained me to do that. But the reason I gave it a 50-50 is I could not give the match a miss. I really couldn't. But everything leading up to the match, I really wasn't a fan of. Bruce, on Grimes versus Hayes.
Quickly on Grimes, the issue with Grimes for me is I just don't see his To the Moon gimmick as anything that's more than 24/7 material right now. And yep. Part of it is, how do I put this? People like The Miz, who I keep comparing Grayson Waller to, saying Grayson Waller's floor is The Miz, they're in on the joke with the humor. And with Cameron Grimes, it seems that he's bought into it too much instead of actually being in on the joke. And there's no serious side from Grimes anymore. It's all comedic. And the whole build was comedic. It was all about Grimes, you know, getting a one-up on Williams and Hayes and laughing about it. It wasn't about, usually in these situations, it's, oh, he's playing mind games. He's getting into their head, yada, yada, yada. None of that was ever framed in this context for this feud. And so with, you know, we all love Cameron Grimes. We all loved him before. I just don't see this particular character, this iteration of Cameron Grimes, as anything more than just jobber comedy material on Raw or SmackDown. And that's another reason why I was so down on having this match happen so quickly in the first place. With Hayes, so the good thing about Hayes being in NXT right now is he is the one who shines. And I think about, when I think about champions in NXT who seem to be bigger than the brand itself to me, I think of people like Adam Cole as NXT champion, Shayna Baszler as NXT champion, or like Samoa Joe as NXT champion, or even Shinsuke Nakamura. People like Finn Balor, I don't necessarily see as, you know, bigger. So I think it really depends on when Hayes would have been in NXT. If he was there with the Undisputed Era, I think it would have been harder for him to find, what's the phrase? To kind of find that space to stand out. Look how difficult it was for them to find the spots for Keith Lee in NXT, even though it's so hard to miss with Keith Lee. And they still couldn't really book him right. And I know Wade reported that some of the issues may have been because of Keith Lee, but you know, when you have such a force like the Undisputed Era, or like a Samoa Joe, or like a Shinsuke Nakamura when he was in NXT, not Raw or SmackDown, it does make it much more difficult to have a standout act like Carmelo Hayes. So this is one of those like big fish, little pond, or like little fish, big pond kind of things, because definitely the quality of NXT, even 18 months ago, was much higher than it is right now in terms of the established talent, the experience, the match quality, and then, as we'll get to later, the promos and vignette quality. However, I'm just, how do I put this? It's like, While I do think Hayes would have still been successful, I think this is the perfect spot for him because he stands out so much more above everyone else on the show, even the established stars like Escobar or Io Shirai, and even the NXT champion right now, Bron Breakker. So I think there's pros and cons to looking at it either way. I'm just glad that at least we have Carmelo Hayes to sort of anchor the show week in and week out, because he is there week in and week out, cutting promos, having matches, and making his presence known that really, if NXT isn't a show that he's on, and he's the show, like he is NXT right now. And I think it's Hayes, and then you get a big gap, and then there's Waller and Breakker and some of them, and then another big gap in everyone else. And that's kind of the power rankings to me right now in 2.0 of who is and who are the top acts.
All right. And before I throw it back to you, Darrell, I do want to bring up real quick a big thank you to Joel Pearl. He actually got a hold of me on Twitter. The line that Ryan was referring to with the tournament that he was talking about actually wasn't a tournament at all. What was said on commentary was that winning the Dusty Cup would give them a match versus Imperium possibly at WrestleMania weekend's NXT Stand and Deliver card. So it wasn't referencing a tournament at all, but it was referencing Stand and Deliver. So Joel, thumbs up. Thank you very much for that. And now Darrell, back to the regularly scheduled program.
On card, then I will wonder how to go see, because I'll be there that weekend, so I want to see how that card turns out.
Oh, I'm not jealous. I'm not jealous at all.
Just to see how that all fits. But, yeah, I get what you guys say. I just feel like his star, because it means something when you in the league and you got other stars. It means something when Steph Curry beats LeBron in the playoffs than it would if just Steph Curry running through a bunch of nobodies. And the stardom just feel a little different when you have somebody that you have to up your game on, which a lot of early NXTs, and I'm not talking about the last year and a half of NXT takeovers where you had to carry in crosses and stuff like that. What made NXT a lot hyper when I'm talking about the glory days and right when the Finn Balor came in and stuff like that, and you had to see people make people. Where you seen the babies being made by the sausage who was just being made and the stardom pushing. Then you had other matches on the card that pushed those matches to even be even greater. So that's what I would have loved to see, because a lot of the people that you see now, and I can see why they bringing up the Tommaso Ciampas or something like that to the main roster, because those are the last holdouts. Those are the last ones who are making something out of something on the main roster, just like the Bianca Belairs and stuff like that. So that's why I see, and you don't see that today with any of the people who they bringing in. And going to the main event, I know y'all touched on it, even with the Bron Breakker, who not living up to the moment that being given him, if it was somewhere else, or even if it was the main roster, you would have people saying that he's been spooned, he's been stuffed down his throat because he's given everything, given the unique entrance that nobody on the card is getting. And where either he burning something down, tearing down an old logo or something, but the match is not comparing to what you're seeing. Because I remember talking to you guys, and that was something that Karrion Kross had, and that you, Tom, then was saying before. He was just an entrance. And he wasn't living up to the performances, because a lot of the performances that came ahead of him was outshining his matches by leaps and bounds. So, you know, that's the thing that I noticed about tonight and the Vengeance Day thing. It seemed like it was more vengeance on the eyes than it was the name of the show. And one big thing, none of the matches seemed to fit the theme that they was pushing. So I understand why you gave the main event a 50-50, because nothing seemed, and that's with a lot of the booking with the regular NXT, nothing seemed as big as it should.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad you brought that up, Terrell, because I said that for a premium live event or whatever you want to call these, the only match that the Dusty Classic too, but really the only match that was a feud ender was Hayes and Grimes. Everything else was still extended somehow. And for something especially called Vengeance Day, isn't that supposed to be a time when the stories end? So that's just another one of those weird booking things, I think, with NXT right now, where they're just going back to that earlier question about being booked up against the Olympics. They probably just doing things week to week and don't even know what's going on. So sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. And to kind of just piggyback off of that point too, like one of the other things that I noticed in terms of the booking here is, like, you know, you've got this long running feud going between Grayson Waller and LA Knight. Now you're here at your big show, which is supposed to, you know, be the kind of end cap for your feuds for the most part. You know, yeah, you extend one or two, but for the most part, you want your feuds to end at your big shows. At least that's kind of the way it's always been. And now you've got this random like segment that takes what, maybe 5-10 minutes out of the show, with Grayson Waller, LA Knight versus the police department, essentially, you know, and it's just building to a feud or building to a match for next week's regular NXT show. It's weird. And so your point, it's the booking in NXT is certainly not what it used to be. It's a little weird. I don't feel like they're booking from, you know, they're bookending their booking with the big shows. You know, it's like a feud should start and then, you know, end at the bigger shows. If it's a big feud, you know, a money feud, yeah, extend it on the smaller of your premium shows. I'm going to call them pay-per-views because, man, you know, I don't really – PLE doesn't sound right to me. But, you know, you've got your smaller pay-per-views. Like Vengeance Day isn't really – I don't know. Maybe it is kind of one of the bigger ones for NXT, I guess, but – because the Dusty Classic seems to always fall around Vengeance Day, things like that. But, you know, continue feuds at the smaller of the pay-per-views and you want to end your feuds at the bigger ones, as far as I'm concerned anyway. So, anyway, I rambled enough right there. Darrell, what else do you have for us tonight?
Okay. Doc Bruce. Y'all got to stop disrespecting the Miz by comparing everybody to the Miz, because Grayson Waller definitely not Miz type or level. A lot of people would love to have the Miz career. I know.
I'm talking about potential here. Directly comparable right now, man. I'm saying potential.
Oh, yeah.
This guy could be the Miz at his floor. Right now, he is.
And people love to say that. And I know on the other TV show, they like to call out the Miz as being like that's a slight or something like that. But
when was it? I was on with you and Tom, Nate, either War Games or right after War Games, and I said, Grayson Waller's floor is the Miz, and that is a great career. You should want to have the Miz's career. Two-time Grand Slam champion, future Hall of Fame. Like, you should want that. So I'm not saying that in any negative sense of the term, Darrell. I'm saying that as the floor, his character, the potential and the projection is that he could be the next Miz for them. And that is a good thing, because you're going to be guaranteed to be on TV every week, getting a paycheck in title matches, in big spots, in big feuds. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that in any negative sense of the word. All right, I just want you to understand that. No negativity in that comparison at all.
I got you. I just think Miz's character has so many high ceilings because a few times they dropped the ball with him because he could have been over babyface. But, you know. But going on to my last point would be having Walter come out there and then Sokoa come out there. I'm interested to see how that goes and see if they're going to let Walter be Walter. And I ain't calling him the other name until I have to. But see if Walter's going to be Walter and they're going to let him be who everybody know who can be. Because if you do that and then you put him up against Braun Breaker, that is the lip. I can't even say the but that's the test for him right there, just to see where you stand up. Because if they allow to be Walter, you would figure how they booking Braun Breaker. You can't book him that way against Walter because again, that is the ring general. And what makes it hard for them to book Braun Breaker already is because you made a guy who you have told us he only had 5 matches and such like this. And he's supposed to be able to hang with 10-year veterans and stuff like that just overnight. Just because you had one match and then you go in the gym and you train hard and stuff like that supposed to just, like, they making it seem like he went in the room and time chamber where you went in there for a day. And you got a year worth of training, 10 years worth of training.
Hyperbaric time chamber, baby. Dragon Ball Z.
Yes, sir. Like, you got them many years of training out of one day. And that, and I know y'all were talking about story, that would kill story because sometimes it is good to see your heroes fail and then accomplish, even bad guys. It's good to see them fail, then come back, and then they succeed. Then you see something that they run up into what they had trouble with before, but then you see them grow up out of it and stuff like that. Michael Jordan, the greatest player the greatest basketball player of all time, but his first, 7, 8, almost 10 years, he didn't even sniff a title, didn't get close to it. That made bigger stars, LeBron James, they were starting to question who he was and stuff like that. But that makes you bigger when the people can see how you handle adversity and stuff like that. They push them so fast that you don't know what's next, who's next. Now you have to say, well, let's put a Dolph Ziggler out here for him so he can just bump around and just give him a match. That's not really being in a match and giving them a match just so we can have something to make it look good. But what happened when the Dolph Ziggler is gone? When you have to bring something to the table and make it believable and you have to add your part. When you put them against somebody who everybody's seen as an old, overwhelming force, that's why I say it'll be interesting if when they have Sokoa go against Walter, if that's next week or not. See how they go, because if they dumb down Walter against Sokoa, where Sokoa getting a lot of offense, where you rarely seen anybody get offense on Walter like that, and he's able to survive, and you don't see the big chest slaps, and he's coming out red and bruised, and it looked like he was in the fight, then you can already know where he's setting up with the fights, because that's something that you could tell in this show today, too. I know y'all were talking about people fighting in the corner, like Braun Breaker fighting in the corner and stuff like that. You've seen that with the Tops of the Attraction matches. You could tell how they set up a certain type of way where you got people playing catch-up and not just going out there doing it. And all the matches look the same. So I want to know how that goes and what you guys think how that match would go. And that's it for me.
The match in particular, talking about Sokoa and Walter.
Yeah, Sokoa and Walter. I don't know the other guy name.
Yeah. But I don't know. That name doesn't exist here on this particular show yet. You bring up a really good point. Like I really hadn't thought too much about this Sokoa match next week, other than the fact that it's going to happen.
I don't think they've announced it officially though for next week, have they?
They They haven't, but I mean, it's if it's not next week, it's going to happen at some point in the near future. At least, you know, it's almost inevitable with the way that they kind of pulled that angle off tonight, that it's going to happen in the near future. So if and when it does, it's going to be interesting to see how this match gets booked, because Sokoa has really been booked strongly, and I've really enjoyed what he's been doing so far in the ring. You know, he's got some mic skills. You know, he's not nearly as polished as, you know, his brothers are, but he's on his way. So I really think he's going to be able to bring something to the table for this company for a long time, simply partly because of his name, but also partly because of his ability. You know, and I've really enjoyed his style in the ring. I think his style in the ring is going to be pretty complementary to Walter's, Gunther, Walter's. And I'm curious to see exactly how it will get booked, because, like, yeah, you don't really want to have Sokoa get that much offense on Walter right now because of how he's getting pushed and potentially flirting with the NXT title scene. But at the same time, you really don't want to define Solo Sokoa down, because he's really just starting to get some momentum and his feet under him. So they're going to need to do something here and book the match where it's probably going to wind up being some sort of a weird, screwy finish or something like that, where both men wind up looking better on the end of the match than they did going in. How they get there remains to be seen, but that's got to be the way they do it. I can't see them having Walter just go out there and squash Sokoa, and I can't see them doing it the other way around at all. I think that's even much less likely. So, Bruce, what do you think?
I think Gunther, Walter give up a lot of offense to people a lot smaller than Sokoa, like Pete Dunne, like Tyler Bate, like Ilya Dragunov. So, to me, it's not necessary. And Sokoa is someone with a body type, his size, his ferocity, his aggressiveness, where it's believable if he were to get a good amount of offense in on Walter. Now, I don't think he should win, but this is another one of those things where 2.0 needs to make up its mind on how it wants to be developmental. Are you actually going to have these new people be built up and worked enough to where they can actually conceivably, believably defeat these more established talent like a Walter, like Io Shirai, for example, where instead of us going into the match, aside from Braun Breaker, knowing that they're probably going to lose, right? Like D'Angelo losing to Dungeon is a clear example of that. The thing here is I think Sokoa already was defined down tonight, and that's because he said he was going to step in there and slap the taste out of Walter's mouth, and he never entered the ring. Like, you tell me you're going to do that. I understand there's two other dudes in there, but you even said, I know you got your dudes in there, but I'm going to walk in there and slap the taste out of your mouth, and he didn't do anything. Right? Just got done talking about, you go in, you find the biggest dude, and you take him down, and, you know, he just walked away. Which, I understand. Again, there's three dudes in there, but when you say something like that, I'm expecting you to
follow up on it.
To follow up on it, exactly. Thank you, Nate. And so, for me, that to me was a big misstep. He just should have said, I'm going to slap the taste out of your mouth when we get in the ring together. You know, just those little extra words would have made it a little bit more palatable to me. Again, Walter shouldn't lose, but Sokoa isn't in a spot where he should be just losing matches right now anyway, because he had just come off a feud with Boa where it was a weird feud, but he came out victorious. And for him to go right into a feud, props to him for coming out and calling out Walter, even though it just came out of nowhere. But, you know, his promo up until the slap you and taste out of your mouth set up why he came out to call out Walter. It's just, again, is this the right moment for Sokoa to be having this match? And then what I wrote in my report about this segment is Sokoa is going to lose, but hey, I want to see this match. I do think that Imperium is really... reinforcing some of the criticisms of their act in their appearance. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right. And Jarrell, what else do you have for us tonight?
Okay. Last thing would be, in my opinion, some of the new people that they bring in just, I know last time I called you guys, I was like, man, I just can't follow behind none of the new people that they bring in. Not believable. You can see the types. I done been around WWE for a long time, and I know the Bruce Pritchard, Johnny Ace types of talent that they like. And you can see it all over again. And if you remember those types and how horrible those times were, especially when Johnny Ace was over recruiting and all of that, you remember those years? That's why I think Beth Phoenix didn't ever get a fair shake.
Mm-hmm.
That's something else. But the Lion Girl.
Oh gosh.
I don't think it's cringe worthy. And then it looked like they giving her a character that doesn't fit her and that made for a totally different person as
Jarrell, get a load of this. Get a load of this. She actually does it. She actually has music out and on Spotify. Like, it's not a character. Like, she actually is that. It's crazy.
If she got music and that music is supposed to, how they making it seem
it's
like
terrible.
Some type of R&B, if that's some type of R&B music, then yeah, it's people out there calling her a poser and she eating off of something that she don't understand, but.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how, especially with the true face of NXT, who they got as the true face of NXT, and that act all together, and especially that match that they had with two of the people out of that group, just had, I don't trust the foresight of where things going, especially when you might have a change coming pretty soon. Probably later on this year, seeing how stuff starting to change, and another place starting to show you the cracks, and they got a budget, and they budget cricketing and cracking. but that's another conversation. What do you guys see in Lions, and where do you see that going? Because if that's somebody they can push, another person who I know Bruce brought up that I want to see how they build her up. Ivy Isles, that's part of Diamond Mine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she'll ever get a push if this the way that they going. But what do you guys think?
God, I really want to see Ivy Nile. We've only seen her a handful of times, and every time she's been in the ring, I've been impressed with her. So I definitely want to see more of her. As far as Nikita Lyons goes, God, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. She had a match on 205 Live. I can't remember who it was against off the top of my head, but Google it. It was terrible. It was like 3 minutes long. She's clearly not ready for prime time just yet. And this character that she's trying to portray, maybe, yes, she's doing it in real life, too, because, like, the songs that she had on Spotify, they're older. It's not like they just released them, like WWE produced them or something like that. They were a little bit older. Tom happened to find them, and he linked them to me and Kelly, and it was like, oh, my God. One of them, I want to say, is passable, but, like, on the worst side of passable, and the other one was not even listenable. I couldn't get, like, 30 seconds into it. But this does not fit her. It really doesn't. It comes across as posery. It comes across as Instagram model. Like Tom brought that up, I think last week, the week before. It's bad. It really is. And the only way I can see them pulling it off is once she actually debuts, that it's a complete joke. that, you know, she thinks she's all that and she really sucks. And I really don't think that's the way they're going to go with it. And if it does, if that is the way they're going to go with it, that gimmick is dead on arrival. Bruce.
So let's rewind a bit. If you remember her first vignette, she was rapping. And then because of the outcry, including myself, who my first reaction, and I tweeted this, was, you got rid of Hit Row for this?
Oh, I saw that tweet. That actually made me chuckle.
You got rid of Hit Row for this? So after the backlash because of her terrible rapping, the next week she was a Rhea Ripley knockoff talking about bashing dudes at her concerts or in mosh pits or whatever. And then this week we have an amalgamation of everything. She's hitting pads. She's in the studio. She's studying for a test or some shit. You know, sorry, or something, you know. And what in any of that appeals to me? Nothing. What in that seems genuine? None of it. Even though
Nothing.
She does, even what's most indicting is that, as you said, she does this, and yet it doesn't even come across as believable. That is a huge indictment on your character presentation, because the old adage of professional wrestling has always been the best wrestlers, the best people, the best characters are always those who are just an extension or a hyperbole of their true characters, right? So the fact that you can't even get your actual real-life character over in professional wrestling as believable, that is not a good sign. I don't like ragging on people like this, right? But it's also, and I understand, like, you know, when I came on developmental, I get it. But developmental also means that they need to be developed to a certain point to at least belong on television to get more reps. Whereas I don't think she is at that stage yet. You know, people like Indy Hartwell, people like Persia Parada, people like Gigi Dolan and JC Jane, you can still see where they need to work, but you can also see that they at least have the requisite skills to be on TV right now. I don't think that is the case with Nikita Lyons. And on a macro level, I just want to talk about NXT's vignettes as a whole, because aside from people like Hayes or Breaker, the ones tonight were just so grating. The Josh Briggs and Brick Jensen one at the bar was terrible. This Nikita Lyons one was just downright awful. And we tend to praise
the opening intro tonight.
Oh gosh, that was so bad with the text and the emojis and trying to hype each match. Look,
it was like
some
sort of like 90s teen girl show or something. Like, it was terrible.
Yes, it was like a Nickelodeon show, like All That or something. So I'll give them credit for trying something different, for trying something unique. The execution was terrible. And that's why this show felt like hit or miss, because the matches were for the most part good. These vignettes in between, though, just really were not good. Regarding Ivy Nile, because Bivens is a gem. I just remember when Roderick Strong was getting ready to face Walter, and this is the match where after Walter declared himself Gunter, Bivens said, after Strong's through with you, Ivy's going to get in there and stretch all of you. And I popped so hard for that, because, yeah, Ivy Nile would, I'm not going to doubt that Ivy Nile could get in there and stretch anybody she wants to.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, she looks scary. But I mean in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean that in the best way possible.
She looks like Valentina Shevchenko. Don't hurt me. She reminds me of Valentina Shevchenko from the UFC.
I don't watch UFC, so I don't know. I'd have to pull up a picture of her. But I feel like she does belong in the octagon. Absolutely. You know, and I mean, yeah, she definitely needs work in the ring. I mean, I liked what she did, but she was certainly green. There's certainly things that she needed to work on. Specifics, I don't remember off the top of my head. I just remember that was my takeaway from her two matches. But I really want to see much more out of her. Darrell, I think you said that was it for you tonight. If not, I'm going to cut you off because we got a few more emails to get to, and we've got a couple matches we still haven't talked about.
Yes, sir. That was it.
All right, buddy. Hey, it was good to hear from you. Good to hear from you, man. And feel free to call in again and, you know, let us know what you're thinking of what's going on if you happen to catch something.
We'll do, and it was good to talk to both of you guys tonight.
All right, I'll let Tom and Kelly say let you know. I'll let them know you said hi.
Yes, sir.
All right. All right, so let us go over to the mailbag. I'm going to go to an email from last week. I apologize to Kevin Catani that I completely forgot to hit your email, so I apologize for that. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well as I bide my time till tomorrow's, last week's finale of The Book of Boba Fett. I thought tonight's presentation was solid, and at least on Hulu, you really didn't know you're on sci-fi based on production quality. That said, I thought the main event was solid. I knew based on timing of some sort of shenanigans, but while I would like to see Kaylee Ray as champ, do you think she's someone they see money in on the main roster, or will this be a prolonged program for Mandy? Also, do we have any inclination as to whether there'd be an NXT PLE during WrestleMania weekend? So we had both of these actually answered tonight. Kaylee Ray looks like her next thing's probably going to be with Io Shirai going for the Dusty Cup. And any inclination as to an NXT premium live event during WrestleMania weekend, they did mention Stand and Deliver, thanks to Joel Pearl. We know that information now. So office hours are now over. Thank you, Kevin. We're going to go next to an email from Jack Argyle regarding LA Knight and Tiffany Stratton. And of course, as soon as I go to talk, I inhale my own saliva. I apologize for that. Hey, guys. It's been a while since I've emailed in. I want to pick up where you left off last week about Tiffany Stratton, and I saw what Tom saw last week, a future big-time player on the main roster. She seems to have picked this up pretty quickly. What do you guys think? Also, I've been pretty high on LA Knight, but last week especially, he came across to me as ultra cool and somebody who is desperately needed on the main roster. Do you think he goes up once this Waller feud is over? Thanks, guys, and stay safe. Jack from Wales. Let's go to let's talk about Tiffany Stratton. So I haven't seen it yet. There were certainly things that she did in the ring that I went, whoa, like her finisher, I feel like is completely clean. And if she's able to kind of clean up her act a little bit more, like, yeah, I think I might definitely see it. Right now, I'm not there yet. Tom certainly is. He was gushing about her last week. I want to see a little bit more out of her before I kind of make that determination for myself. But hey, Tom is a good judge of this stuff, so I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. I do feel like she has picked things up pretty quickly, you know, considering she's only been in the ring. I don't know how long, but I know it hasn't been that long. So, you know, I definitely think, there could be something there. There could definitely be something there. As far as LA Knight goes, yeah, he is main roster ready, like front and back. His promo work, and I've said this before, he almost feels like The Rock, like The Rock light. You know, he's not quite there. He's not the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, by any stretch of the imagination. But man,
he's not even the most electrifying man on Tuesday nights, but okay.
Well, no. Probably not, but his promo ability, his mic skills are top notch. I don't think there's anybody in NXT right now. I can't really think of many people on the main roster that could really hold a candle to his promo work. I completely agree with Jack. I think he comes across as super cool. He came across as a bit of a nerd for a little while. Well, I wouldn't say nerd, but kind of like, you know, that guy that's trying to be tough and trying to be cool and then gets put in his place. And he hasn't felt like that for at least a few months to me. I really think that there is a place for him somewhere on Raw, somewhere on SmackDown, and that he could certainly be a game changer on those shows if booked correctly. Whether or not they insert him right into the main event, I don't know. They kind of really kind of danced around him in the main event here in NXT. Kind of, I think he was in one multi-person match for the title, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that, but I think he was. Other than that, he was kind of danced around the title. He was never in that main event scene. So I'm not sure if that's an indication of where they are going to slot him on the main roster. But I personally think that character on the main roster in Vince's hands with Vince's vision for what the main roster is supposed to be in his eyes, I feel like he's exactly the type of toy that Vince is looking for. I feel like Vince will kind of have an idea of what to do with him and book him strongly. I wouldn't be surprised if we did see him, you know, toiling around the main roster scene, the main event scene on the main roster. Although I kind of have a feeling like upper mid card is most likely where we're going to see him slot in right now. And then from there, he does well, maybe he moves up. If not, well, you know what happens from there. Bruce.
Maybe I'm just overall these interchangeable white dudes, but he just comes off as a jackass to me. Mostly because he has to say yeah all the damn time, and the whole, what was it, let me say something to you, whatever it is, like when Waller's music hit interrupted him before he could say yeah tonight, I wrote in my report, thank God, because it's just so annoying. I understand what people see in him and why they like him. Him, to me, he's just annoying, and not in the good ways to me, because I just really feel like he's an a-hole. And
yeah, I can certainly see that. I can certainly see why you feel that way.
I liked him a little bit in Impact when he was a heel. I'm not a fan of him as a face. And even when he was a heel, there was a lot of times when he was grating. And so for me, LA Knight, if he goes to Raw or SmackDown, good for him and good for me, because I won't have to cover him anymore. I also forgot to mention there was another terrible vignette earlier in the night, and that was the Raquel Gonzalez Cora Jade one. The whole, like, we're trying to be cute, but it's being too forced, and it was just another bad vignette.
I wrote in the hits and misses that it also looked like it was shot by an eighth grader.
it was bad. So to Tiffany Stratton, now it should be no surprise to you or to Kelly or to anyone really that Tom and I have like almost the exact same taste in professional wrestling. And the two of us have been high on her since the beginning, much more so than you and much more so than Kelly, especially. And when comparing her to Nikita Lyons, for example, Tiffany Stratton's character, when I see her, I believe her, right? Even if it's not necessarily who she is, it seems that she's bought into it, and it's believable that that's the character that she is, unlike what I'm seeing with Lyons, right?
When you give me the comparison to Lyons, I'm like, you know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
So she knows her character, and just by that, right? I mean, I guess you could counter me by saying, well, Wendy Chu knows her character, but that's a whole different story. But because of how Stratton understands and doesn't try to do really things that make her more face, she uses her gymnastics in ways to amplify her already heel tendencies, which is good. And so that to me is one reason why I think Tom and I are both so high on her, but also she has looked better and better in the ring every time she's out there, much more smooth. Yes, she still has some of the psychology to get down, and there's some, you can still see some moments where she's thinking through her stuff. But when we go back to the discussion about people having the requisite skill to be on TV, she definitely has the base already set to be there and then grow from there, unlike, you know, Lyons, who I just am not – she debuts next week. So it's going to be really that's going to be our indication of exactly where she's at in her development. And I hope for her sake that – because of the discourse surrounding her with her vignettes the last few weeks, that she does well, because it could go really, really bad if she doesn't have a good showing next week.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and you know, you said it earlier, like I hate coming down on people, you know, I hate being negative about somebody, especially when they're trying, you know, and they're going out there and they're trying to go
and
do the
TV.
Best they can. Absolutely. You know, that's not an easy thing, you know, to have, you know, I mean, almost a million people, if not more, you know, have those eyes on you. Like, that's not an easy thing. Like, I want to see everybody succeed. So, you know, I want to throw that out there. I don't think they're putting her in a position to succeed. And it's, I think somebody either needs to like tell her, okay, we need to go a different direction with this character. We need to pull the pull the plug right now, pull an Emelina type of a deal and just take you off TV for right now and repackage you, or something like that. But I don't feel like this particular character is going to do anything to benefit her, at least from what we've seen so far, from what I've seen of her. Her in the ring from that 205 live match. I Googled it last week, actually during the show, and because Tom brought it up and it was 3 minutes long. I listened to it or I watched it while he was talking about something. And it's like, oh my God. There's a couple spots that showed a little bit of promise, but like the finish was terrible. It just looked awful. I don't really have confidence in her in ring skills right now. And for her, I mean, maybe you could chalk it up to nerves, you know, for her first televised match or something like that. But, you know, if that's how she's going to be in the ring next week, I don't feel like they're putting her in a position to succeed. You know, they should have developed her more before trying to debut her. So it'll certainly be interesting. It'll certainly be interesting to see what they do with Nikita Lyons. So let's go over to an email from JB. He says, and I needed to read his subject twice because I thought it said abundance of Los Angeles, but his subject is abundance of love angles. Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. Do you think that NXT 2.0 is defaulting too much to love angles? Yes. Yes, I do, JB. Yes, I do. Oftentimes with seemingly not enough substance? Yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do, JP. Ever since the Index wedding, yes, I know the origin of that was from the Black and Gold NXT. I can think of at least three or four attempts at love angles or sexually frustrated angles. I'd like a little bit more variety and creativity in my wrestling. And I don't even think it's an argument that this show is now a developmental brand. That's a really irrelevant to the topic. As always, love the show and go VIP. Yeah, so I kind of threw my thoughts in there throughout the email. I forget who exactly it was that said this. It might have even been you, Bruce. It might have been Joel Pearl. Actually, I think it might have been Joel that I think about it. But somebody on Twitter said it, that NXT 2.0 is essentially high school. And it kind of is. It feels like high school. You've got all of these people kind of in these weird feuds over weird stuff. And
Malik Blade getting an erection over Mandy Rose falling on him.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, the freshman having some senior happen to fall on him and like, he's like, oh my God, I got a boner. Like, that's just, it's not funny. It's just really lowbrow humor. You know, yeah, some people may have got a chuckle out of it. I'm sure Vince probably got a chuckle out of it. But that's not what I want to see on NXT anyway. There is that kind of that, I don't want to say mandate, but that's the only word I can think of, that kind of mandate to spice up NXT a little bit and, you know, make it a bit more of an edgier product. And, you know, that's kind of what I think they're trying to do with these love angles. I think that you've got a whole bunch of old white men going, well, that's what people want. They want sex. That's not necessarily what I want. If you want to give me an edgier product, give me an edgier version of the Black and Gold NXT, you know? That's kind of really what I would want, but whatever. I don't feel like the love angle and all this sexual stuff is really kind of drawing people in. I mean, people I think are still watching NXT that have been watching NXT. You know, the numbers have been kind of steadily, I think, improving, if I'm not mistaken, but not by much. So it's not like they're drawing in much of a crowd, a new crowd anyway. And it's just this edgier stuff just kind of feels old. Like it feels like they're trying to do a almost PG version of the Attitude Era, which you can't do, you know, and that's a loose, like a very loose comparison, not necessarily the Attitude Era, but like, you know, adding some of those edgier things in and some more of the sex and stuff. But to do that to a PG product, it then comes off like, you know, grade school humor. So that's my two cents. Bruce.
And let me get this straight. It is the basis for the angle right now, the interest between Duke Hudson and Persia Parada simply the fact that they're both from Australia?
Maybe. You're talking the friendship between the two of them, you mean?
Well, they walked off holding hands together tonight after
Duke Hudson. I don't know. Like, the only thing that I could kind of gather was that Duke Hudson saw a damsel in distress and was like, my lady, and walked off with her. And that was kind of what Wade Barrett said on commentary right after, was just kind of like, oh, Duke Hudson's so hot. They take in all the babes. Or I forget exactly how he worded it, but it was something along those lines.
But they've been sort of hinting at this interest between Duke and Persia the last few weeks, and kind of just basing on the fact that, yeah, and so, how do I put this?
I don't know if it's necessarily a thing where they're both Australian. I mean, knowing WWE, probably. But at the same time, I don't know if it's that or if it's just a fact of, like, Duke doesn't really have anything else to do right now.
Well, that's on them. How do I put this? How do I put this so WWE will understand? Men and women and everyone in between have plenty of relationships together that don't involve any sexual or romantic tension. I don't know if I could say it any clearer than that.
Are you sure? I mean, I have a sexual relationship with everybody I know.
Nate, you just might be the best Casanova out there for all I know. Ivy Nile has, there's nothing between Ivy Nile and anybody in Diamond Mine, for example, right? Why not just do that? Like, just make them be friends, like usual people. But, being friends in professional wrestling gets you nowhere. Being rivals or being love interests, that supposedly draws the money.
Sorry, my mute button got stuck. That's weird. all right, so let's kind of see if we can get things wrapped up here. There's a few other backstage things that happened and whatnot, but we'll kind of gloss over those. But the only other match that we haven't really talked about was Toxic Attraction versus Indi Hartwell and Persia Parada for the women's tag titles. So I've just kind of real quick, my thoughts on the match. The match itself, I don't think is necessarily bad. Certainly not the greatest in the world, but Persia Parada coming along, still green, but, she's definitely coming along. As far as like the match was kind of underwhelming because you really didn't think there was any chance of Indi Hartwell and Persia Parada actually winning the tag titles. Right now with Toxic Attraction, how strong they've been booked, I can't see them losing the titles to anybody right now. Persia Parada and Indi Hartwell, they were the best choice to go up against Toxic Attraction right now. You think of who's in the women's division, the only other real established tag team right now that seems even remotely credible, in my eyes anyway, with Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter, simply because they've been an established tag team in NXT for so long at this point. And they're doing this whole high school love angle thing, or, well, friend zone angle with the two cowboys there. So the fact that, and this isn't really a knock on Indy and Persia so much as a knock on the booking and the status of the current women's division, but they were the best choice to go up against Toxic Attraction at one of their big events. I didn't think there was a chance in hell that they had that they were going to win simply because of that. Let's not even talk about the booking or anything leading up to this. So for me, it was hard to get into this match. It didn't really work for me. Simply because I knew what the outcome was going to be all along. So Bruce, what did you think of the tag match, women's tag match?
I wrote that it was a meh match, and that's really what I was expecting out of this. There are definitely still times where I see Indi Hartwell kind of losing her spot in the match or not being at the right time kind of thing. And then, yeah, Persia Parada is still green. She's working as kind of the next big powerhouse in the women's division. But as you said, there's just like with the main event, you really part of the investment is gone because you know the outcome. It's not an outcome that you necessarily, you know, desire, so to speak. So what I will say is I do like Dolan and Jane's variation of the high-low, where I think Dolan just did a PK to the back of the leg while Jane hit a big boot to the front of the body. So it was a different version of the high-low we're used to with kind of the leg sweep and the clothesline or the kick from Kyle O'Reilly to the chest. So that was nice, but, you know, the thing with this women's tag team division, especially after they've released so many talent in the last 18 months or so, there's just not that depth that you're talking about, that you have to go with who's there. And the fact that Catanzaro and Carter, who are more established as a tag team, who have more reps as a tag team, were involved in something completely unrelated to the division, doesn't bode well for the division because you have no one else there, which is probably an indication that Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray are going to run through the tournament and win. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if they become women's tag team champion to reestablish them a little bit and give some more pedigree to the titles, because look, good for Toxic Attraction, but, and it's not necessarily their fault. It's just the division has not been booked to an extent to where there should be any sort of investment from the fans, aside from those who are fans of these individual wrestlers. And again, developmental is also about developing your titles, the lineages, the pedigrees, the cachet of becoming that champion. This is one of those titles where if they don't really focus on reestablishing them, they might have to scrap them once again.
Yeah, I mean, that's a damn good point. I mean, what's the point in having a title and having something to chase if it doesn't really mean anything? So, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I definitely agree with what you're saying. And I think with that, that's going to bring us to the end of our show tonight. We didn't necessarily hit everything. There's a few backstage segments and things that that we didn't get to, but I think we don't really want to. I don't really want to talk about Dakota Kai having an imaginary friend at this point.
Kelly's got to have a trip next week.
I think I need to have a talk with Kelly before he watches this particular show or comes, you know, and watches the show next week and prepare him for such a travesty. Dakota Kai, just quit, please. Go somewhere where they'll appreciate you. That's all I can say. And we're going to end on that bit of a downer. So I am Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. Do the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up for Vengeance Day if you'd like to check it out. And if you're interested in role-playing games and ways they can be used therapeutically, check us out over at DegeTime. That's DegeTime on YouTube, where we do just that. We kind of show you ways to get some therapy out of your role-playing experience. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. You can find my alt perspective reports on NXT 2.0 every Tuesday night. You can find my Vengeance Day report up on the Torch right now. Also, I was on the Dynamite post show last week with Wade, and it has a tie-in to NXT because it was Keith Lee's debut. And
bask in his glory.
Yes, but, you know, Wade, partly due to all the reporting he's done on Keith Lee over the past year or so, wasn't as high as a lot of people. So if you want to hear a really nuanced, detailed, critical discussion about Keith Lee and AEW, I would point you back to last week's Dynamite post show with Wade and myself. So, but again, on Twitter, B_Lee253, and every Tuesday on The Torch, my NXT 2.0 reports. Everybody, have a good night.
And since we didn't get one of those plugs in tonight, guys, if you go VIP, check out NXT 8YB with Tom and Kelly, where they take a look at NXT and where they were 8 years ago to the day. So, guys, with that, I'm going to do again what I did last week and steal Kelly's outro, and we'll see you in 7.